This is Irene Bullard returning with the second half hour of the Bloomington Normal Pantograph. We will now continue with the death notices. Betty Jean McClelland, 93 of Bloomington, died at 2:02 a.m. Wednesday, May the 13th at Heritage Health and Normal. Her service will be at 1 p.m. today at Beck Memorial Home in Bloomington. The Reverend Tiffany Black will officiate. Entombment is in Park Hill Mausoleum in Bloomington. Memorials may be made to the West Olive United Methodist Church in Bloomington. Blanche Marie Geiselman, 76 of Normal, formerly of El Paso, died at 9:50 p.m. Sunday, May 17th at Heritage Healthcare Normal. Her service will be at 1:30 p.m. Wednesday at the Secor Cemetery, Secor, with the Reverend Steve Evans officiating. There will be no visitation. Memorials may be directed to a charity of the donor's choice. Arrangements are being handled by Calvert and Metzler Memorial Home in Bloomington. Carol Happ, 83, of Lincoln, formerly of Hartsburg, died Saturday, May the 16th at Timber Creek Village Assisted Living in Lincoln. Her service will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday at St. John's Lutheran Church in Hartsburg, with the Reverend Lisa Goodwin officiating. Visitation is from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Wednesday at the church. Burial will be following the service at the Hartsburg Union Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the Hartsburg Emden FFA or Safe Haven Hospice. Funeral arrangements were entrusted to Frick Calvert Schrader Funeral Home in Lincoln. Guy E. Alexander, 59, of Pontiac, died at 2 p.m. Wednesday, May 13th at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. His funeral will be at 11 a.m. Thursday at Calvert Johnson and Froelich Memorial Home, Flanagan. Burial will follow at Center Cemetery in Flanagan. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the memorial home. Julene M. Henry, 65, of Toluca, died at 8:08 a.m. Saturday, May 16th at OSF St. Francis Medical Center in Peoria. Cremation rites were accorded. A mass of Christian burial will be at 11 a.m. Thursday at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Toluca, with Franciscan friars officiating. Inurnment will follow at St. Anne's Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at Calvert, Johnson, and Froelich Memorial Home, Toluca, with the rosary at 3:30 p.m. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorials be made to the Toluca Ambulance Fund or the Toluca Park District. Landon Allen Malden, 13 days of age, of Normal, died at 10:36 a.m. Friday, May 15th at OSF St. Francis Medical Center in Peoria. His funeral will be at 11 a.m. Thursday at East Butte Christian Church in Normal, with the Reverend J. K. Jones officiating. Burial will be at Evergreen Memorial Cemetery in Bloomington. Visitation is 1 hour prior to the funeral, Thursday at the church. Memorials may be made to the family in Landon's name. Kibler Brady Roostman Memorial Home in Bloomington is assisting the family with arrangements. Nola K. Embry, 63, of Bloomington, passed away Friday, May 15th, in Normal. Visitation for Nola will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday at East Lawn Funeral Home, 1102 Airport Road in Bloomington. Her service will be at 10 a.m. Thursday at the funeral home. Burial will follow in East Lawn Memorial Gardens. A reception will follow the burial at the POC Church of the Nazarene, 2407 Beach Road, Bloomington. It is the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Union Hall. Dr. Robert E. Myers, 90, of Clinton, passed away at 1 a.m. May 10th at his family residence in Clinton. A memorial service will be at noon Friday at Clinton Presbyterian Church, with the Reverend Benjamin Keller and the Reverend Samantha Keller officiating. Burial will follow at the Memorial Park Cemetery in Clinton. Visitation will be from 10:30 a.m. to noon Friday at the church. Memorials may be directed to Dr. John Warner Hospital Foundation or Clinton Presbyterian Church. The family has entrusted Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton with arrangements. Robert Lee White, Jr., 69, of Minunk, passed away at 3:57 a.m. Sunday, May 17th, at his home. His funeral will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday at Roostman Harris Funeral Home in Minunk, with military honors conducted. Franciscan friars will officiate. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. today at the funeral home. Cremation rites will be accorded following the service, and interment will be in Minunk Township Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the Bob White Memorial Fund for various organizations at the Minunk Community Bank, 137 West 5th Street, Minunk, Illinois, 61760. Now let's move on to the editorial. Right to work vote was a waste of time. The number of problems facing Illinois and the General Assembly is long. There's no sense wasting everyone's time detailing the issues that are vital to getting Illinois out of the economic basement. The so-called right-to-work initiatives being pushed by Governor Bruce Rauner may arguably have an impact on the state's business climate, but there are more serious issues that are more important. So it was a colossal waste of time last week when the House spent time debating and voting down a right-to-work bill that was never going anywhere in the first place. Democrats behind Speaker Michael Madigan staged the vote. For the record, the bill received 0 yes votes and 72 no votes. Most Republicans, as instructed, voted present. Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican Forsyth, was one of the exceptions. He didn't vote either way. Democrats accomplished their goal. They can tout the measure, received 0 yes votes, and use the one-sided debate as campaign advertising fodder. This isn't about right to work, Mitchell said. It's about dividing people, and it's not fair. Mitchell is right, but it applies to both parties. Since his election, Rauner has spent a good deal of the time touring the state, talking to mostly friendly audiences, and touting his right-to-work ideas. He wants the General Assembly to give local governments the ability to establish right-to-work zones, saying they will help bolster economic development. Local governments have been asked to consider approving a non-binding turnaround resolution that has received some, but certainly not overwhelming support. While Rauner contends that he has nothing against unions, he knows right to work is a divisive issue. Pushing the idea is as much about dividing people as is having a one-sided vote in the General Assembly. There is undoubtedly a time and a place for a reasonable discussion about whether it's wise, given changes in the worldwide economy, to consider right-to-work initiatives. But the state's overall economic outlook would be improved much more quickly with a stable pension system, a balanced budget, streamlined government, workers' compensation reform, lower taxes, and a more business-friendly attitude by state government. Once those issues are resolved, the General Assembly could tackle Illinois' bloated governmental structure, school funding, tort reform, fair political maps, and ethics reform, just to name a few other issues. Rauner and the General Assembly need to get focused on the important issues and quit playing politics with less important ones. And there are no letters to the editor today. And now let's go back to articles. Traveling Vietnam Wall, returning to Leroy. The wall that heals, a 250-foot-long replica of the Vietnam Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C., is returning to Leroy in July. The city and American Legion Rural Neal Post 79 are coordinating the free public display. It will be July 23rd to the 26th in Kiwanis Park in commemoration of the 40th anniversary of the end of the war. Opening ceremony will be at 7 p.m. July the 23rd, and candlelight closing ceremony will be at about 9 p.m. July 26th. The exhibit will include several historical military displays and 2 8-foot submarine models. The wall will be escorted to the site July 21st by hundreds of veterans and volunteers via Interstate 74. American flags will be raised July the 22nd with the help of the Leroy football team. To donate time, services, or financial support, email leroywallvolunteers@frontier.com. Illinois Supreme Court to hear $10 billion Philip Morris appeal. Springfield. The Illinois Supreme Court is set to hear oral arguments on a $10.1 billion class action verdict against cigarette giant Philip Morris USA. The court will hear the case today. Last year, an appellate court reinstated a 2003 local verdict that Philip Morris broke state law by marketing light and low-tar cigarettes as safer than others. The Illinois High Court initially ruled with the company because federal rules allowed such marketing. A 2008 U.S. Supreme Court decree allowed for reconsideration of the Illinois case. The plaintiffs asked Justice Lloyd Carmeier to recuse himself because they say that he is biased in favor of Philip Morris. Carmeier refused and says he has no conflict. The case is Price versus Philip Morris. Legislation to ban powdered alcohol advances. Springfield. Legislation banning the sale of powdered alcohol is heading to Governor Bruce Rauner's desk. State Senator Ira Silverstein, a Democrat from Chicago, has been pushing the measure since the beginning of the spring legislative session, calling it a public safety measure. "We don't need people spiking beverages," Silverstein said earlier this spring. A company called Palcohol created a powdered alcohol which comes in a pouch and can either be sprinkled on food or added to 5 ounces of water to create a drink. Palcohol is set to start business sales this summer. More than half of the states have legislation pending to ban or to regulate the product. Some have already banned the substance, including Delaware, Alaska, Louisiana, South Carolina, and Vermont. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey vetoed legislation to ban powdered alcohol in April. Puerto Rico has a House resolution in the works to study the product. Rauner is not saying how he will act on the measure. "The governor will carefully consider any legislation that crosses his desk," said Rauner's spokeswoman Catherine Kelly. The legislation is Senate Bill 67. Tax hike options percolating in the Capitol. A House committee could take up a proposal as early as Wednesday to raise the income tax rate on millionaires, but House Speaker Michael Madigan's plan to amend the state constitution to allow the special surcharge on wealthy people isn't the only tax proposal floating through the Capitol as lawmakers enter the final 2 weeks of the spring legislative session. With Governor Bruce Rauner calling for significant reductions in state services to help fill a $6.2 billion budget hole, a variety of revenue-generating ideas could surface as a way to eliminate or soften the cuts to social service programs, universities, Amtrak, and public safety. Here's a look at some of the potential tax hikes. Income tax. The January 1st expiration of the temporary income tax increase has meant a massive shortfall in funds to operate state programs. Some Democrats favor an increase, but Rauner has said that he wants to see a number of pro-business initiatives approved before he can get on board. Service tax. During his successful campaign for governor, Rauner issued a list of possible taxes on a variety of services that could be used to generate revenue for the state. Legal services were among those identified as potential targets. State lawyer groups opposed the tax. Retirement income. A plan that would tax income for people earning over $50,000 annually from their pension or retirement account has been percolating in the Capitol for over a year. Rauner has not gotten on board with the idea. Estimates show that it could raise $1.5 billion per year. Tax loopholes. A House committee led by State Representative John Bradley, Democrat Marion, has been studying ways to close tax loopholes on businesses for more than a year. A proposal outlining the details has not been introduced. Satellite tax. State Representative Art Turner, Democrat Chicago, continues to press for a tax on satellite television providers. In addition to the tax increases, lawmakers also are talking about expanding gambling to include new casinos in Chicago, Rockford, Waukegan, Danville, and Chicago's south suburbs. Forecasts show additional gaming could generate nearly $500 million in new revenue per year. Republican State Representative Tim Butler, a freshman from Springfield, said talk of tax increases is all part of the last-minute push to find a compromise between Rauner and the legislative leaders. I think us on this side of the aisle, Republicans, are very hesitant to raise taxes, Butler said, but there are going to be cuts and restructuring. At the end of the day, is there going to be some sort of a revenue enhancement? I would guess probably so. In testimony to a Senate Budget Committee Monday, the head of a Chicago-based organization of businesses agreed that a combination of reforms, tax increases, and spending controls is the fairest way to address the state's budget mess. We'll all have to sacrifice something. People will have to act against their interests, said Lawrence Missel of the Civic Federation's Institute for Illinois Fiscal Sustainability. Madigan's millionaire tax is the only tax hike scheduled for debate for now. The proposal would ask voters if they want to impose a 3% tax surcharge on incomes of more than $1 million. Madigan says the estimated $1 billion revenue boost would help schools. Republicans have opposed the idea, saying that it could send small business owners out of state. The proposal comes on the heels of a similar but non-binding ballot question last fall that drew a positive response from 64% of the electorate. But the tax would not have any immediate effect on the next state budget, which begins July the 1st. If the measure does get placed on the ballot, it wouldn't be voted on until the November 2016 election. Jury convicts two Illinoisans in a $4.5 million Medicare fraud scheme. A federal judge in Chicago has convicted two Illinois residents in a $4.5 million Medicare fraud scheme that involved billing the government for services to people who were dead. Two employees of Medical Physicians Group in Schaumburg were each found guilty last week of one count of conspiracy to commit health care fraud and related charges. Rick E. Brown of Rockford ran the in-home visiting doctors group. Mary C. Talaga of Elmwood Park was the company's biller. Prosecutors said that Brown and Talaga falsely billed Medicare for services never provided to patients, some of whom had died. Faked bills included those for services supposedly provided by people after they had left the company and by medical professionals who worked more than 24 hours a day. Sentencing has been set for dates in August. And here is Bill Flick's fact for May 19th. Question: what central Illinois county is the most dangerous one for tornadoes? McLean County, Woodford County, Livingston County, LaSalle County, or Tazewell County? The answer: with more than 100 recorded tornadoes since 1950, McLean County is Illinois' Tornado Alley. Although McLean County's size, it is the largest county in Illinois geographically, could be one reason for more storms. Nearby LaSalle County the state's second largest county, has had only 29 recorded tornadoes since 1950. And Livingston County, the state's third largest, has only 35. And now here is a health-related article. Making Stress Work for You. Kelly McGonigal, author, Stanford psychologist, and pioneer in the new field of science help, translating academic science into practical use, challenged the conventional view that stress is bad with her viral 2013 TED Talk, How to Make Stress Your Friend. In her new book, The Upside of Stress, McGonigal argues that stress can transform fear into courage, isolation into connection, and suffering into meaning. She explains. Question. There are a host of studies showing how stress is bad for our health. Stress has been associated with high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, inflammation, cancer, and newer studies are showing it can shrink the brain. Yet, you argue there's an upside to stress? Answer from the author. It's not that the research that stress is harmful is all wrong, but it really needs to be put in context. That science is largely based on animal studies that are largely based on a model of torturing animals, depriving them of social contact, restraining them. They're designed to create a defeat response. And when stress shrinks the brain, damages the heart, I argue that it's not from the stress itself, but from a toxic relationship to stress. Question. A toxic relationship to stress? Answer. When stress feels against your will and out of your control, if it's completely devoid of meaning, and if it isolates you from others, that's what I mean by having a toxic relationship to stress. And if you have that kind of stress, then it really is associated with the consequences that we fear. Yet there is as much or more research that shows stress doesn't increase the risk of depression or other harmful health outcomes when you have a different relationship to it. It's how you think about stress that determines how it affects you. And many times, how we think about stress is the only thing that we can control. Question. What changed your mind about stress? Answer. The first real trigger for me was a study published online in 2011 that showed that having a high level of stress only increased people's risk of mortality when it was combined with the belief that stress was bad for health. The same was not true among people who had high levels of stress but didn't believe that it was bad. That study confused me. It was a real existential crisis for me because my mission as a health psychologist is to help people. I'd been indoctrinated that stress is the enemy and that we need to reduce or avoid stress. And the message underlying that is that if your life is stressful, you're doing something wrong or there's something fundamentally wrong with your life. There's no hope there. Then you're more likely to isolate and withdraw and practice avoidance, coping like drinking. That sent me on a journey to find out if that was right. And that's when I found several other studies that show it's how you think about stress that matters. For instance, the Whitehall study in the United Kingdom showed that stress increases cardiovascular disease only if you believe stress is harmful. The other moment that convinced me, I began teaching in my Science of Stress class how embracing stress can help you handle stress. And the look on my students' faces I had never seen before. I realized I had been depressing my students with the message that stress is bad. Instead, I began introducing research that shows stress can be helpful to high-pressure situations to enhance for performance. And the more you take that mindset, the more stress and anxiety can propel you to greater success. Afterward, people thanked me for that lecture. But what made me commit to making this switch is not only that the science is good, but in my first book on chronic pain, The Willpower Instinct, my scientific work on compassion, the underlying premise of all of those is the more you try to avoid and resist the suffering, the worse it gets. the more you mindfully accept it, the anxiety, the suffering, the stress, and take action anyway, the more it improves your own well-being. It takes shifting your stress mindset. Question: how? Think of stress as a signal of meaning, not that you're inadequate to the challenges in life. Trust your human capacity to transform stress into something good. Compassion, hope, meaning. People who are more stressed out, who worry more, surveys show, are also more likely to say their lives are meaningful. For instance, last night I got this email. It made me really sad and disappointed. It took me a few moments, but then I realized the disappointment and the sadness were signs of how much I cared. And once you recognize that, it's important to stay engaged and to think about what action you can take that's consistent with your goals and values. That is the mindset shift. Instead of seeing stress as a sign that something is wrong and then choosing a response that's more destructive, like thinking, I'm not cut out to be a parent, or this job is too much for me, think, okay, I'm angry right now, I'm overwhelmed because something I care about is at stake, so what do I want to do about that? Maybe you feel like you're in a bad place and you care about your health, so you decide to practice self-care. Or you want to stand up for yourself or apologize to someone because the relationship matters. Even the anxiety that comes with stress, research shows that if you choose to believe that anxiety can help you, that it's part of your body's way of trying to give you energy, that can help you meet peak performance challenges. Question: how can people start shifting their stress mindset? I tell people to spend a couple of minutes writing or reflecting on why a stressful situation is connected to something meaningful. Would they rather not have it in their lives? If you're caring for an aging parent, would you rather not have a relationship with your parent? Or is it that the loving relationship that you've had makes you want to take care of them rather than send them to a nursing home? I also tell people to shift into what I call the bigger-than-self perspective. Take a few minutes to see their stressful situation as common rather than unique, that what they're experiencing is part of the human condition. One way we experience stress is through contraction. We feel trapped in our bodies and our own emotions. We start ruminating on stories very tightly focused on us rather than what other people feel, and feel isolated, that we are alone in our suffering. But when we shift and think beyond ourselves to who else is in this situation is struggling, or what people I care about are experiencing, we can use our own struggles as a catalyst for helping others. Research shows that anytime you shift your focus to paying attention to others in a compassionate place, it increases the brain's reward system and propels you to take action. Rather than paralysis and fear people often feel around stress, it increases hope. And so that is the end of our reading today of the Bloomington Normal Pantograph. This has been Irene Bullard, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.